You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right. I could spend half my time qualifying today on this topic. It is a difficult, complex topic. It's difficult because we all have our own experiences, past experiences that influence our attitude. We often have very strong opinions about what we believe about sex, and they differ. And so, you know, it's something that when I speak about it, I sometimes get in trouble because I end up usually offending somebody. And if I offend you today, please feel free to come up and talk to me afterwards. I am much more comfortable talking about this subject than most people are, and so I don't want you to misread my comfort as a disregard or disrespect for the subject, because I have a lot of respect. There is so much material to cover. I usually spend 8 hours in class time going over the material. I'm trying to get it down to 30 minutes today so that we have time for questions and answers. And there are so many aspects to talking about promoting God's design for sex. There is how to talk to your children. What's their attitude about God in general? Do they know His goodness? What's their character development is an important part of this. I can't cover all of that today. So what I want to try to cover is just how to interact and dialogue with your kids in different stages of development. Because believe it or not, you are going to be influencing your children in how to think about themselves as physical beings, how they feel about physical touch and affection, sexual touch from the time they're infants and born all the way up. So we're going to try to hit some highlights in each stage. And I am not going to be able to explain everything. I'm going to do a general, broad overview. And so my goal is that you just realize, oh, I might have a new way of thinking about things more than, oh, I have all the answers. All right, you can have resources and other things. All right, also, I want you to know I do not have the time to build the defense for God's design. It's controversial, and even Christians have different views on it. I am making the assumption, right or wrong, since I titled this Promoting God's Design, that you're at least somewhat okay with it and have, you know, some desire to teach your children His design for sex. So that's where I think the last qualifier I need to make. Except with all of it being so difficult, and I've been misquoted, and I've been putting up on Spirit Watch, which is a cult awareness site. They've edited my words so that I've said some really ridiculous things. I'm not too concerned about that, because even my enemies, I think, know what I think about sex and how important it is to a woman and not just a man. But you could ask, why do I bother when it's complicated, when it's so much work, when I can get in trouble? And I have to say that I have experienced the worst and the best of my sexuality. I have been able to really be healed from significant abuse by embracing God's design. And so I'm compelled to testify whenever I can. So now let's begin. The thing that I want to focus on God's design for sex are just the things that you're going to have to understand to be really educating your children. And the first is that God's design for sex is about relational intimacy, not personal gratification. God wants us to be satisfied and gratified and fulfilled, but that's going to come from relationship more so than just a physical satisfaction. And so that is where, you know, and your children, as soon as they become aware of their penis, their clitoris, they understand how nice it feels when they touch it, they're going to think that sex is all about them. And these, you know, and so they're going to be, and then when they're in puberty, they're more so going to think, this is about these feelings inside of me and how I feel when I satisfy this feeling. And that's what we're fighting against, all right? There is truth in that. We don't want to tell them that they're not, that's not pleasurable or that's not enjoyable. But we want them to realize that it's going to be most enjoyed within the context of an intimate relationship, according to God's design. The second thing, then, that we need to understand, or that I'm going to want you to focus on, is that it's about true mutual desire, pleasure, and benefit. I am very glad to know that finally our culture, our Christian culture, is as concerned about the woman's satisfaction and her pleasure as they are the men. There is no more talk, hopefully, I hope the books are burned, where we talk about duty sex or we talk about serving our husbands in these ways. God has designed it so that there's a mutuality of both desire for sex, pleasure, and benefit, personally as well as relationally. Therefore, you want to be able to teach your kids young, God's desire for sex is to be enjoyed. God's desire for sex is that it's enjoyable and fulfilling. He says it's good. He says he has great purpose. And when we are sexually healthy, whether we're single or married, there is a richness and a vitality to love and relationships that is good. You want your kids to know that. When we're talking about sex, especially through the stages, we are going to be talking about affectionate touch as well as knowing what to do with body parts. I'm not just talking about intercourse. We're not going to talk to a two-year-old about intercourse. Maybe if they bring it up, but maybe not. All right, let's go. What do you need to be able to promote and influence your children? First of all, you need to understand God's design and be convinced it's good, it's very good. And I know that most Christians have a very broad, general understanding of God's design, but there's also a lot of ignorance and confusion about God's design because we kind of get it mixed up with this. It is a physical act. Primarily, it is for my own personal gratification. That we have to fight constantly, and we have to understand some of the things that are involved with really understanding the many specifics of God's design. I have classes online and talks online where you can get that information. All right, and I say you have to be convinced it's good and understand it because you can't give away what you don't have. You're not going to get your kids excited about God's design if you're not excited about it, okay? Then we need to be able to effectively interact and dialogue with your children. This is not a one or two time talk. that you have with your kids. It should be an ongoing dialogue. It should be something they're comfortable with, that's natural. It cannot, when I talk about dialoguing with them, it can't be a nervous panic, you know, oh, please do this or don't do this. Don't talk if you can't do it calmly, positively, naturally. There's a lot of opportunities to be able to talk to your kids about sex. I'm still, my kids are 40. I don't want too many details, but we can still talk about it. I'm starting to talk to my grandchildren about it. I took them out for coffee to help me get updated on what's going on today. And when I called my daughter and my granddaughter to ask if I could take her out to talk about these, my talk, my daughter was like, "Mom!" And I'm like, "What? You know, why are you reacting that way?" She said, "You're doing it to them like you did to us." She goes, I'm like, "Yeah, but you're fine with it, right?" She says, "Yeah, just don't put them on the news like you did with us. We had the news people come out, cameras come out, and they did a show on me talking to my kids about sex, and the kids talked to. My granddaughter was laughing and saying, "Please don't call the cameraman." I said, "I promise." But this is how much we want to talk and how comfortable we want to be with it. Then you must be aware of who and what is influencing your children. Okay, this is so important. This is why I talk to my granddaughters about what's going on, because what I know to talk about is already 20, 30 years old, and it's not that relevant anymore. And they will be influenced. I want to tell you one scary thing, but we'll hopefully not be as afraid of it soon here. There is a sociologist named Jean Twenge. She's written lots of books on the generations. And her premise is the era when you were born has a substantial influence on your behaviors. Your attitudes, your values, and your personality traits. In fact, when you were born has a larger effect on your personality and attitudes than the family who raised you does. I was like, that sounds extreme when I first read that. But then I started thinking, if we just talked about what different generations thought about sex, and we had asked a question of values of sex, asked people to respond by typing, by computer, so that we can't hear their voice or see their handwriting, and you ask them, what's important to you about your sexuality? You ask someone from my parents' age, 50s and 60s. You ask me from the 70s and 80s. You ask someone from the early 200s, and you ask now, and I guarantee you, you will know when they were born, because that does form their attitudes and their beliefs. Okay? I believe that we can still have influence, but I think it's important that we don't have some confidence that, oh, because I care about this subject and I want to educate my kid, they're going to be mostly influenced by us. They're not. Okay? All right. What does your children need to know? What do they need to be able to embrace God's design for sex? They need the ability to control sexual urges, rather than sexual urges controlling them. They need the ability to make their choices out of their own personal convictions, their personal desires, rather than feel pressured by others. I personally, I'm not saying you have to agree with me on this, but I personally am more concerned and was more concerned for my children that they had the ego strength to make their own decisions, whether their decisions agreed with me or not. You know, I believe that it's just so much more important than feeling pressured or feeling like I have to be accepted or to get what I want. Even if they make a wrong choice, if they have the right beliefs, that can be corrected. In fact, I forgot to say this, but it's important. I want you to remember what your children believe about their sexuality is more, I will say it, some people say just don't say it this way, say as, but I'm going to say it's more important than what they do. Why do I say that? Because what drives what we do, but what we believe. And also, I've seen people and have worked with people who have had a good, healthy, correct foundation of beliefs about their sexuality and their sexual expression. They went off the rails and did things that weren't right, but they were healed and able to have a healthy sexual relationship by going back to what they believed. Christians try scare tactics, and they're more concerned with what's being done than what they're believing. And especially when they're young, if you're concerned about what they're believing, you can engage with different behaviors that are questionable to help them get thinking about, you know, what they're doing, why, what they want to accomplish, and it can be a teaching moment if we're not afraid of it. All right? You may fight with me about that afterwards if you want, or in question and answer time. That's my own conviction. So when I say that we need to be able to control urges and make your own choices, I really love what 1 Thessalonians 4 has to say about this. God's plan is to make you holy. And remember, holy just means set apart for what he's designed us for. And he says, and that entails, first of all, a clean cut from sexual immorality. And sexual immorality is just the kind of sexual expression that's not within God's will. I love the way this is said. Every one of you should learn to control your body, keeping it pure and treating it with respect. And never regarding it as an instrument for self-gratification, as those with no knowledge of God or his ways. Naturally, we're going to think of sex as an instrument for self-gratification. We want them to learn that it's more. He says you cannot break this rule without in some way cheating someone else. This is J.B. Phillips and Bev's translation. I kind of added a little bit. But what we want to teach our kids is respect for self and respect for others. What do they need? This is time for you to help me. For a child to be able to respect themselves and respect others, what do they need? Great. I think self-confidence, that internal security, obviously self-control. This is an important one. For them to respect themselves and others, they have to be able to accept a no and give a no. And we'll talk about that with the toddlers. Able to give and receive appropriate physical affection. Kids instinctively know that physical affection is safest, most enjoyable when it is an expression of what is already established relationally. Okay? You ask a child to go hug a big, old, scary Aunt Luella, like my mother did, and the kid is kind of like, no. But grandma, grandpa comes, who they have a relationship with, and they, what do they want to do? They want to run into their arms. Physical affection, the way God designed it, is always to celebrate, deepen what is already established relationally. Okay, so kids already know that. We can build on that. But what's the switch when we start talking about the physical affection that is sexual? It's not about celebrating what is. It's about getting what they want, getting what we want. Okay, so just remember those go hand in hand, and you can build upon and help them learn that it's best enjoyed to celebrate something rather than try to get something. Trying to get something sexually, like self-esteem, security, a sense of belonging, doesn't usually work. You got to have the other piece with it. All right. You also have to be able to be a good friend. That's some of that listening to and taking somebody else's no, respecting. I used to say have good friends, but again, our culture so much, when you say have good friends, they start thinking about who's going to be a good friend to me on my terms. And so I think we have to teach our kids to be a good friend. Then they'll have plenty. And believe it or not, they have to be able to develop talents, interests, meaningful service so that they have other interests in life, especially as kids. You know, so that they're not consumed with just their body. So this is why I say it's so much more than just having a conversation with a kid or just at a certain time talking to your kids. This is discipleship. This is good parenting. It's developing them as in their character as well. This is what they need. But can't get into all of that today. All right, so I want to start with the different stages and what you can do with your children in these stages to promote God's design for sex. Infancy, we know, is the time for bonding in a safe and consistent way. And so what do we do to teach them the meaning and the value of significant touch and affectionate touch? Their touch needs to be safe, gentle, consistent, and sacrificial. Why do I add sacrificial as a mom? I don't know about you, but my little babies were so cuddly, so soft. I really wanted to hold them when I wanted to hold them, when I wanted to enjoy them. And of course, we can and should enjoy our children, but they want to get the message by the way we're relating that we're giving physical affection, not trying to take it from them. And I could tell when I was headed more that way. You know, especially as they were getting a little older and squirming and kind of done with the hugging or the cuddling. And so that is something to consider, that it should be sacrificial. And then we need to learn to talk to them, even as infants. Often, I knew a mom that I respected that was reading the Chronicles of Narnia to their two-week-old. I think she started when they were in the womb. You want to read to them, you want to talk to them, you want to have eye contact with them. especially while feeding them, breastfeeding, bottle, or dinner time. Remember what God says about the value of fellowshipping with around a meal. That's what he offers to do with us. And so make that a time of bonding and connecting. Feeding time is not phone time. I'm sorry, I know, especially if they're, you know, taking time, it's so easy to just do things on your phone, but this is a great time. And you are building into them a security, a confidence. Eric Erickson will say in the stages of development, you are instilling in them hope and trust that they can have healthy physical affection. Okay. All right, the toddler years. These are the years, 9 months once they start crawling and moving to 3 years. And this is a time to promote their independence, their will. I know some of us think we do not have to develop that will, but we have to train that will. And this is where they can have separateness, and they will be saying no. This is a good time to really teach them the proper use of no. We don't want to eliminate their no's, but there will be some training. We'll talk about that in a minute. All right. This is a time when I know we're busy and there's so much to do, but please take time to let them do for themselves, which will mean it's going to take longer than you want. It's going to mean messes that you don't want as they're practicing skills. But this builds confidence that they can do things, and that's very important. If this doesn't happen, there's going to be insecurity. There's going to be shame about and fear to try things. All right. I know we have our kids' personalities to consider. Some kids you're going to have to restrain. Others you're going to have to push out. I know that we all have the freedom to make our own rules about how many messes. I have a friend that lets her kid make the biggest messes when they're eating. Drives me crazy. But I have to admit, I got to respect it, because the fine motor skills that are being developed, you know, it's, you figure out what you can handle, but realize how important it is for them to do this. We want to train their nose to be for independence and autonomy, not rebellion. So what do I mean by that? Training their nose. First of all, I forgot this one, but my husband and said, don't forget this one, and somebody else brought it up here today. You've got to teach them to accept a no as well as give it. All right, now, how do we teach them and help them succeed at accepting a no? I think we give more yeses than no's. It was very easy for me to be busy and distracted and then just say, no, stop doing that. No, don't do that. You know, no, no, no. They're going to tune that out, especially a strong personality, pretty quickly. And so it's more important to give yeses and then direct and redirect them. Give them a chance to be distracted and try something different before you go into the no's. And then teach them expected skills instead of just putting them down and expecting that they're not going to throw a toy at somebody. You got to teach them. This is one of the biggest mistakes I made as a parent. I didn't know the value of actually teaching these little ones how to do things right before starting to correct them and saying no. That means taking some time to play with them. That means teaching them how to, that we're going to walk into a store holding hands, you know, and give them practice doing those kinds of things so that they can build some self-control and they can learn some skills. Does that make sense? Okay, now let's talk about how to dialogue. Dialogue is, in this area, of course, there's lots of dialogue about all kinds of things, but at this age, they're very curious about body parts, inappropriate and inappropriate touch. And this is something, again, that I think it's important to handle the right way. Toddlers are interested in exploring their private parts. They want to touch. They want to see how it feels. They're interested in other people's. Is this good or bad? The right answer is it is good. All right, please believe it is good. What a better time. Is there a better time to learn these things than when you're there with them and they're just now discovering these things for you to have your input? If they get too focused on it, and it seems like every time you take their diaper off, go to change the diaper, you know, they're touching, you can affirm that and then get them distracted about their knees or their toes or their belly button, because they will be distracted. But you want them to be able to embrace all of their body. God designed their body, created it as good. In fact, he said it was very good. And so let's help them learn this. All right. Use teachable moments like bathroom or dressing. When a toddler is learning how to use the potty, you know, I don't want to go into all the things about safe touch and bad touch and good touch. 18 months, 2 years, they're too young. But one thing I said every time to my children, to my grandchildren, when someone's helping you wipe, only the toilet paper touches your skin. Okay? And that's an easy little thing to say. Only the toilet paper touches your skin. And then that's a teaching moment. Okay? And they're getting it. You can decide how much privacy they should have when they're dressing, changing clothes. I think it's fine to, give them a little space, go to another room to teach modesty. I don't think it's a terrible crime if you're changing a diaper in front of friends at all. I don't think it's going to cause problems, but you want to begin to think, how do I instill in them respect for themselves, respect for privacy? Yeah. So that's for there. Now we're talking preschool years. This is your 3-year-old to 6-year-old. And this is the time where they are going to be talking and talking and talking and asking questions and driving you crazy. This is when they will initiate getting into their own things. This is a time they can begin to learn impulse control, self-regulation, and being aware of their conscience. That is something that God gives each one of us, and it's important that you know how to help them develop that gut instinct of what's right and wrong. All right. Toddlers will begin to learn that they can ask questions. They can initiate play and they can accomplish. And you want to make sure that they are accomplishing at this point. All right. This is when dialogue really begins. This is something that is important to know. You need to talk when they want to talk. I did not mind that my kids wanted to talk at bedtime. Some people say they're going to use that, abuse that, manipulate me. And if you feel that way, I'm not saying that you have to do what I did. But I knew they thought they were manipulating me, but I was using that to the fullest because that's when they wanted to talk. And I wanted to talk to them. And so we began habits of talking. We would go out with them and talk. And that was, you know, letting them have some say in what they wanted to talk about. As a counselor type, I was so concerned about my girls being healthy that I was taking them out at this age, 3, 4, and asking them, you know, crazy questions, like how they were feeling and what made them feel good and did any, you know, that they have issues with mom or dad, and they just stared at me. They loved going out with dad. And guess what he talked about? My Little Ponies. He knew all of them, and they would talk to him for hours. So we have to talk when they want to talk and what they want to talk about. Do you know what your kids want to talk about today? I do.
My style is ridiculous.
If you have a 6-year-old boy, if you have a 4-year-old boy, they know Skibby Doo. All right, that's enough. Who knows that this is what your kids are into? Just hung out with 2 6-year-old great nephews last weekend, and they had us all singing and dancing to this. And, you know, they like potty talk. They like talking about butts and poop and farts. So somebody just took advantage of that and made a mime and made a YouTube video and a song. And if you can't beat them, join them. And again, you will then have the ability to redirect, you know, and change the subject if you can meet them where they're at. All right, they got to want to talk to you. You want to teach them to use accurate and specific words for body parts. This is so important, and I didn't really know this until I was doing a class with a child specialist, and she was saying that if your children know the penis, the scrotum, the clitoris, the labia, the vagina, they know the different parts, they're not going to be able to be taken advantage of as much because somebody older, they're like, don't touch my labia. They know this kid's been educated, you know. They're not as quick to abuse. And they can more accurately report if something needs to be reported. This is the age where they are going to explore, they are going to play, they're going to want to learn. Therefore, it is the age where they can be more taken advantage of and get into inappropriate play. So you need to watch out for that. How do you answer their questions? Be prepared, and you want to be as natural as you can. They're going to ask you crazy questions. If you're not prepared for them, ask them to give you a minute. My five-year-old would ask questions, and I'd say, the books would say that you're not supposed to ask me that till you're about 8 or 9. So give mom a couple minutes, and then I'd go like, you know, and figure it out and come back. It's better that we're prepared so that we can be natural, because they are not going to remember our words, but they are going to be imprinted by our body language, our tone, facial expressions. So practice being calm, and Sigma is the name for being cool now. I learned yesterday. All right, you want to address the issues and answer the questions positively and concisely. You don't want to give them a big, long lecture. Give them one quick answer. You know, where do babies come from? Babies come from a sperm and an egg uniting and growing a baby in a mom's womb. That's it. And if that satisfies them, you're done, okay? Because your child's response should guide you on how much information to give. You know, sometimes they would ask a question and no or yes was really all they wanted to hear. Yes, this is okay. No, it's not. You know, they'll let you know if they need more information. All right, instructional play. I'm not going to go into all of these things. I just want you to know that because they're curious, because they're eager to learn, because they want to explore all kinds of things, make sure that play is creative, that it allows for moderate danger and risk so that they can achieve and feel good about what they do. Get them into building things, creating activities, play with them so that if you have a kid that's can't stay real focused, if you spend just 5 minutes getting them focused on something, it's easier for them to play for a while. Guide play with other children into healthy and fun activities. Just don't send them out. Help them come up with, let's play, you know, this pretend game. Let's use these toys. And I do believe at this age, 3 to 6, they need to be supervised. How quickly things can be inappropriate sexual touch and play is amazing. It can be done like this. And again, if it's curiosity, I wouldn't get too freaked out about it. But you want to have some say in what your kid is allowed to be exposed to and not. And so supervision at this age is important. Impulse control, self-regulation, their conscience. I wish I could get into this more in detail, but I've already said for impulse control, instruct them, train them, set them up for success. And that will help impulse control. And definitely when they're doing things right, notice and praise. Self-regulation, I don't care where you're at, let them have some time to just do their fit and ignore and give them time to do it. I was so impressed with a mom at Calumet. She was picking up kids. Her preschooler did not want to leave, started screaming, sitting on the steps, I will not go. She just walked far enough away and then just stood with her back to him. He screamed for over 5 minutes. I timed it. I was getting nervous. I was like, aren't you embarrassed? You know, how can you do this? But I was so impressed. Because he finally got tired. He finally saw that it wasn't going to work, and he finally regulated himself. You're going to have this in the stores, and people are going to judge you if you let them just kind of have their space. But it really is a good thing if you want to teach them self-regulation. And conscience, take advantage of those teachable moments again. If they're feeling embarrassed and wrong, let them experience it if they're doing something wrong. Make sure you're addressing a behavior and not them. You don't want it to be their identity. But teach them right and wrong. Let them feel it. Let them experience it. Help them process it. And help them become aware of all the negative emotions. When am I embarrassed? When am I sad? You know, a kid this age is just always going to be mad or whining. You want to help them do all of that. This, believe it or not, will give them the self-control they need and a working conscience to help them live out God's design if that's what they want. All right, now we're talking elementary school, middle school, ages 6 to 14. This is the time for them to discover their significance, their unique contribution, and where they fit in with others. Children will learn that not only they can accomplish things and do things on their own, they can actually succeed and excel in academics, life, and social skills. It's important that you remember you are no longer the main influencer. They are going to be influenced by teachers, by other moms, by in our church, by youth workers. This is a time where they get bombarded with new influences. This is a sweet time because they still like us and they still are enough under our wing that they're not in terrible trouble, most of them. But this is also a very critical time. It's not time to just lay back and enjoy and rest for a while. That's because they are learning, they are observing, they are comparing, and they are forming perceptions. And their perceptions are vitally important for you to know what their perceptions are and how to interact with them, because perceptions made at this age last sometimes a lifetime, and it takes till they're adults to be corrected, and they really seem more real than the truth. How many times, because your kids have had a hard time understanding a math problem, say, I'm stupid, you know, or I'm mean, or I'm ugly, or I'm fat. Just telling them, no, that's not true. You know, you're real smart. Did it work for us? No, it's not going to work for them either. You need to interact with that and help them think about it. And so this is a critical time to really dialogue with them, keep them talking. So I ask girls this age, what is the most important thing for moms and dads to know so that you'll talk to them? First one is that we're willing to listen. They want to know that we want to listen to them. They want us to ask good questions, questions they're interested in answering, that tell us about their thoughts and their ideas. They want us to be genuinely interested. Again, I'm so impressed with my husband because his 13-year-old and 12-year-old granddaughter and 10-year-old will talk to him for an hour. And I am like, how do you do that? Well, he is so animated and so excited, and he has the next good question to ask them. And they just keep talking. All right. Make conversing fun. I took the, these girls into, bought them coffee. My husband asked me, how much did you spend? Too much. But we went and got coffee, and we broke into the study center, setting off the alarms. Your husband was called. So that we could have a cup of coffee and talk in private. It was fun. Some of my friends, guy friends, came back to visit me when they were in their 20s, and they laughed at how gullible they were and how much information they gave me, because I always had a Mountain Dew and a real Coke on hand for them to stop by and get any time. And it wasn't any, you know, off-brand. We spent hundreds and thousands of dollars in the teen years on genuine Coke, but they wanted to come and talk because they wanted a Mountain Dew or a Coke. So make it fun and then listen some more. Then you want to be knowledgeable. Again, be knowledgeable and don't just correct them. Let them have develop critical thinking, truly discuss issues with them. And one of the girls said yesterday, and instead of telling them what you think, let the Bible speak to us. And I thought that's a great thing. You know, you want us to trust God and obey God, then tell us what God says, not what you think he says or what you say. I thought that was fair. What do you need to know about what your kids are talking about, being exposed to, wrestling with at this age? This age between 7 and 14. At this age, and it might be different by the time your kids, if it's a new generation, it might be different, but the Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas are more concerned about gender identity. And it's pretty important for them. They are being told it's important for them to not know exactly what their gender is and to be open to that being a fluid thing. I think instead of just saying, don't listen to that, don't talk about that, I think we better be able to help them, you know, talk and think about that. And obviously not judge people that feel different than they do. They also, you need to know that sexual activity is down. Kids are not getting into sexual activity as much as they used to, but sexting is huge. And sexting meaning anything from just talking crass, showing body parts, and this is something that I was told by the youth workers, that even kids that seem so shy and so quiet because they're texting, they can be really crude and bold. So you want to be able to prepare and figure out how you want to deal with this. I know, and I've known for a long time, that talking about your sexual preference, whether you want to be hetero or bi or trans, all of that starts in fifth grade. And that those, and girls, especially girls, are being confronted with, will you be my girlfriend? You know, let's experiment kissing. So again, I think it's not a smart idea to just freak out and try to hide them from all of this or just try to scare them into believing like you do. I think critical thinking, helping them formulate their own ideas, is important. All right, now, I'm closing up. Conviction from God. When you are talking about, I would like my kids to truly consider embracing God's design for sex, you need to understand this is a job that only the Spirit of God can do. You can be the best communicator. You can be as knowledgeable and as fun to talk to about these subjects. You can know, and it's not enough. This is something that needs to just come from God Himself. He wants to give our children these convictions, but I want you to remember that this is God's job more than ours. Gary and I were way too confident in our ability to influence our kids, way too confident about the environment that we were raising them in, and their exposure to the Word and good people that are guiding them. It's not enough. They need to have their own. That you want them to know that He's trustworthy and committed to their good. He doesn't want to restrict them. He doesn't want to hurt them or limit them when He has their design for sex. He wants them to be the healthiest and have the most fulfilling long-term sexual experience that they can have. You know, He wants them to have great sex more than they do and more than we do. Help them believe that. I think it's also very important for us to consider that if you want your kids to submit to God in this area, that we've got to teach them it's right and good to submit to Him in all areas. If we're picking and choosing, guess what? They probably won't pick to submit to. You know, I didn't. They're not probably going to either. Okay. Then, what do you need to do with this area? You need to have the faith that God does want to empower your children. This is His will for them. That means it's His promise to them. We get to cooperate with God. He's not some distant, you know, person just laying down the rules and expecting. He wants to be intimately involved, and we just get to be a part of that. It's not our responsibility. You want to point out when they do benefit from obeying God and trusting God. Oh, you forgave that person. Oh, you apologized. How much better did you get along with your sibling or your friend when you apologized or you shared? You know, you can teach them that His ways are good and they do benefit from it. Then pray. I didn't pray enough. Gary didn't pray enough. Pray. And pray and learn how to pray. Our prayers should not be like people who don't trust God, begging and pleading with Him, even offering to fast, you know, one day a week through all the teen years if He'll give us what we want. We don't relate to God that way. You want to pray confidently and learn how. And then I also think it's important to pray big for your children. We should not just want to keep our children safe. We should want them to be champions and leaders in helping other kids know the value of waiting before they become boy crazy or girl crazy. The value of keeping their clothes on and understanding why it's safe and clean and healthier to keep clothes on. You want them to be able to be a champion for this. Okay. And so that will keep our prayers big instead of small. Lord Jesus, thank you for this time. There's a lot, it's still too much I covered, but I know that there's one thing that you want to really put on the mind and the hearts of these moms so that they can be excited and be positive about their kids' sexuality and them growing up in a healthy way where they can control their body with respect and dignity and honor. And so give them that and help them have ongoing conversations. Amen.